Right now on Fast, the NASDAQ and S&P break a three-day losing streak. The Dow slides for a fourth straight day. We'll go inside the surge in semis, the bounce in biotech, and the crumbling in big chunks of the tech market. Plus, Disney on the clock, limping into earnings. The stock is down over 30% this year. We'll ask the traders, is it primed for rebound, or would they rather bet on another entertainment name? And later, Elon Musk says he thinks he can close his deal for Twitter in 2 to 3 months. He said he would also reverse the permanent ban on former President Trump. He sounds bullish. So why is the stock not trading the same way? I'm Melissa Lee. This is Fast Money live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of Times Square. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Karen Fireman, Guy Adami, and Dan Nathan will join us in just moments. We begin tonight with the destruction of capital rippling through the tech sector. Yes, the Nasdaq finished the day higher for the first time in four sessions. But look under the hood, and name after name is crumbling. Here's just three examples from today. Upstart, an AI lending platform, cut in half after they cut full-year guidance. Carvana announcing that it will lay off 2,500 workers, or 12% of its workforce. And Peloton falling to an all-time low after reporting a major loss for the quarter. The CEO saying the company is thinly capitalized. From Netflix to Uber to PayPal, the list goes on and on. So will the unraveling of the tech trade create a cascading effect beyond the market cap destruction that we have seen in the indices? Tim Seymour, what do you say?
Well, we've already seen massive destruction in high multiple tech stocks. And I think there's a very different story around a lot of tech. You know, we can talk about semiconductors, which were up 2.6% today. And these are cash flow rich companies that I think still have robust demand in chips. The fact that you're seeing consumer finance companies that were not profitable trading down to this multiple, or, you know, actually lack of a multiple because there is no earnings profile, is not a terrible surprise. We are in a place where, while the consumer's balance sheet is in great shape, it is something that I think people need to be worried about. Those names that are up there on the screens are not big surprises. If you look at the market today, actually the underperformers were parts of the real economy, more brick and mortar. I mean, Altria was down big, Caesars was down big, TJ Maxx was down big, and actually tech and things that had been so oversold were actually up. So I think this is a day where at least sentiment was better. I don't think it changes overnight, but I'm not necessarily going to be assessing markets based upon those tech high flyers that already had been crushed.
And I don't think that's what we're saying necessarily. I think that we're taking a look at this in the sense of there's an adjustment going on. And Bank of America actually brought this up, this notion of, we have huge multiple contraction. We have major re-ratings in big swaths of technology. That leads to corporations examining their budgets. We're hearing about layoffs now. And what impact does that ultimately have on the consumer, which is such a big part of the economy? And, one individual name, an upstart like After the Bell or Peloton, Dan, that's nothing. But collectively, this could have a bigger impact.
Yeah, right. Listen, if we are on the heels of a recession here, we know that these government transfer payments had run out here. We know that consumer credit is very high. We know that the cost of borrowing has gone up dramatically in such a short period of time. So that's the consumer right there. But Mel, I'd say the knock-on effect for enterprise spending could be huge. If you think about just all of these companies that are retooling, we saw Uber, Debo was reporting this last night about how they're going to be more focused on profits. They're going to be making cuts. What does that mean? Well, it could be servers. It could be server chips. It could be ad spending. It could be, Microsoft Azure or Amazon AWS. I mean, this is actually the playbook of 22 years ago in the dot-com aftermath in a way. And so to me, I just think there's a lot of knock-on effects that haven't really filtered in. We've seen a lot of private tech companies be pretty aggressive right now because the cost of funding has gone up pretty dramatically. I think we're going to start seeing that in the public markets here. And to your point, it's going to have effect on consumers, and it's also going to have effect on enterprise spending.
I mean, big cap technology, granted, their balance sheets are much different from a lot of the other names that we mentioned at the top, Karen. But there could be a reexamination of budgets in terms of travel, in terms of ad spending. We've seen that already in terms of ad slowdowns for some platforms out there. I mean, these are things that haven't necessarily worked through the system, so to speak.
Right. I mean, to that point, exactly. I look at Trade Desk tonight, and I don't know where it is right now. Is it maybe off a lot? I don't know exactly what happened during the quarter. It was a revenue miss, but I think, to me, that should correlate with Facebook. So it's not fantastic. They have sort of traded somewhat together. So, to the extent that Facebook and Google have underlying elements that are consistent with Trade Desk business, that's probably not great. But I really do put those two in a very different bucket of huge, huge cash flow, very cheap valuation, moats around their business. And it's very different than the things that we're seeing announced tonight, like a Roblox, where the multiples are just crazy. And they've come down a lot, but even down 75 or 77% today wasn't quite enough for Roblox to be down. So it was down a little bit more after. Maybe it's, I don't know where it rallied to or wherever it is right now. But those I think of as a very different animal. And so I think that there is even still more room to come out of the super high flyers, that maybe they're no longer high flyers, but the multiples are still big because they're not earning any money. So therefore, I do think that ripple effect you talk about could absolutely happen. That's one maybe saving grace for the Fed. That does happen. And wages come down. Labor, if unemployment goes up, wages come down. That's actually helpful to the Fed.
I mean, the Fed wants to slow demand down, right? It wants to slow down this activity of the consumer guy. And so maybe they're getting exactly what they want in this implosion within the tech sector.
Well, I'll say this at the risk of being added. I don't think the Fed knows what they want, because 6 months ago they wanted inflation. They were begging for it. And we said, be careful what you wish for, because you're going to get it. And now they're trying to flip the other way. So, Leon Cooperman came on before, between text messages and phone calls. He basically saying what we've been saying for a while. They have lack credibility, and I'm with them on that for sure. So when you say, what does the Fed want? They don't know what they want. And quite frankly, tomorrow's CPI number, I don't think they know what they want in terms of that either. I think below 8.3%, I think the market has a knee-jerk reaction to the upside. I think that's a bear market rally. Above 8.5%. I don't know what to tell you. I'll say this in terms of Karen's point. She's right. So many of these stocks, you can make a very compelling case on valuation. But these names, more than many, were the beneficiary of this passive investing trend that's taken the market by storm over the last 5 years. They just went up because of money flows to a large part. They could be, the flip side of that coin is, if passive becomes active, it ain't going to be active on the way up. It'll be active on the way down. And we're on the precipice of potentially something exactly like that.
Yeah, we've seen that. So we've seen that already to some extent. And Tim, you were mentioning today on our conference call, which we have at 12:30 Eastern time every day, that
yes,
you're worried a little bit about the consumer. We always make the case that the consumer is very strong, but they've actually been levering up a little bit more. The number of credit card accounts that were opened in the first quarter hit a record, according to the most recent Federal Reserve Bank of New York survey out there. So we know that they could be crushed a little bit in terms of rising rates.
And aggregate credit in terms of consumer credit card debt is possibly about to be a record after $8.3 billion was paid down during the COVID dynamic, which had people unable to spend. So if you're talking about APRs that were, 14, 15, and they're going to 19, 20, and then actually you then have balloon payments and obviously penalties. Look, right now the consumer's balance sheet is in great shape. Corporate balance sheets are in great shape. But to think about at least where revolvers are and credit card debt and even home equity lines, money is a lot more expensive for consumers. You have pulled forward already a lot of demand. I think it's important that we look at this. And I think, market want, I think, a faster Fed reaction than they're getting. And if you look at today, we actually had Fed Governor Meister on the tape somewhere, late morning. And really, this did change the complexion of the market for a couple hours before markets recovered. But basically wanting to leave all her options on the table, that 75 could still be in the cards. And I think markets want a very aggressive Fed and possibly a deep recession that hopefully is shallow. That is hopefully short, not shallow. And I think that's really the dynamic for markets here. But yes, the consumer is someone that I think we have a lot of faith in now, but be careful.
So Tim is saying that the markets want the Fed to act decisively and quickly, Karen. So in that vein, if CPI came in hotter than expected, do you think the markets would actually go higher?
Because the Fed would be perceived to be on it. And I think this Fed today, Tim talks about Mester twice, two different times. She was out today very, very hawkish, including saying we have to be selling our MBS. which is going to make housing more expensive, right? Getting a loan will be more expensive. And so be it that that ends up putting a chill on the housing market. She, you know, that it doesn't matter. They have to address inflation. So if it's hot, I think that actually will be a negative because they will have to do something more. They either will have to change course and do the 75 that Powell said he wouldn't do, or we know that they're going to be, you know, just doing 50s more longer. I think cooling is better in general because it'll be they're working. I don't think they'll pull the I don't think they will, you know, pull back if it starts to cool, because we got a long way to go to get to an inflation number that's comfortable, a long way.
Let's get back to tech here. Bring in longtime tech investor known for his early stakes in Pinterest, Airbnb, and DraftKings. Rick Heitzman is founder and partner at First Mark Capital, friend of the show. Rick, always great to see you.
Always great seeing you, Melissa. Thanks for having me on again.
This re-rating in the high multiple growthy tech stocks in the public market, are we seeing that in the private markets too?
We're seeing, and it's actually even more draconian in the private markets, in that, you know, as people are looking at last year's IPOs as being on sale, with everything being down and even tech leaders being on sale, a lot of the money that was going into the private markets from crossover funds or public funds has now left the public private markets, and therefore multiples are down even more significantly in the illiquids.
Hey, Rick, it's Dan. How are you, man? So listen, you know, you've traded through lots of cycles in both public and private markets here. You know, looking at what's going on, though, in the public markets, are there some multiples for some of these kind of, you know, once really hot growth areas, whether they be SaaS or they be consumer internet, that you're kind of focused on in SaaS? Is there like a multiple of sales of some of these names that have just gotten absolutely obliterated down 40, 50, 60% that makes sense to you to start dipping your toe in the water in the public markets?
There's some that are strategic, and you know, I think everyone saw Daniel Ek and Spotify today, him buying $50 million of shares. But that's a really strategic asset. You know, audio is becoming more strategic with the incredible growth in podcasting, and as other folks are very, very focused on video streaming. You know, obviously, the names you know of Disney and Netflix and Paramount. You'd want to be able to put those two things together. We've talked about it before. It makes tremendous strategic sense that I think that's on sale and that could go for a very large premium as part of a transaction. The other things we've seen is, you know, some of the SaaS companies are kind of breaking into that, you know, well, you know, 2016, 2017 sub 9x revenue multiple. And you know, you're seeing, you know, former darlings down 80%. I think Shopify, which has an incredible long-term trend on it for more people buying things in e-commerce, and although, you know, they're down compared to amazing comps during the pandemic, I can only imagine seeing more and more cardboard boxes around the streets in New York, and we think that's a phenomenal long-term trend that they should benefit for forever.
Rick, in terms of growth, you know, a lot of these companies came into being at a time when money was free, basically, and it was growth at all costs. So now we have the, you know, a reversing environment, and these companies just weren't built to withstand this environment, let alone switch gears so quickly, because it really did change on the dime, it feels like. So I'm wondering, when you take a look out at some of these companies that have collapsed in terms of market cap, do we see a resurgence of these companies, or for some of them, or is it lights out, do you think?
I think some of it, it's lights out. Some of it need to change leadership. So oftentimes the leadership that got you there isn't going to be the leadership that gets you to the next stage. And you're right. There's tons of cases of whiplash out there that this time last year, almost every technology company's three top priorities were growth, growth, and growth. Now everyone's focused on profitability, unit economics, and path to capital efficiency. Obviously, Barry McCarthy's, you know, has his work cut out for him at Peloton, and whether he could change, you know, a growth culture to a profitability-focused culture and build a great asset there. In both the public and private markets, though, you're seeing the best entrepreneurs and the best CEOs adjust to this market. And obviously, it's easier to adjust on a PowerPoint than it is to operationalize it. But, you know, that's with the talk of every board meeting, whether you're a public or private company these days.
Rick, thanks for joining us. Always good to see you. Rick
Heitzman. Always good seeing everybody. Thank you.
Karen, let's talk about Peloton. When you hear a CEO say thinly capitalized, it's never a good thing. And you made the point that they just recently did a capital raise, a pretty big one.
They did. Thank God they did that capital raise. They announced, I think it was in October, November, a few days after they said they don't need more money. They got, I think, about $1.2 billion, which saved them. I mean, you know, that was brilliant. As just, you know, announcing defeat and fine, I'm going to the capital markets. That was a really good thing to do. Maybe that was Foley's finest hour. I'm not really sure. One of the metrics in Peloton that I found most interesting was that they did have subscriber growth. But if you look at the number of rides or engagements per subscriber, it was down, I thought, a fair amount, which to me is a foreboding of more churn as you use your bike less and less, and it becomes more and more of, you know, the clothes hanger that we call it, that you're going to cut off your subscription. And they're planning on raising prices $5, which takes the yearly bill to a little over $500. So there was nothing to like except that, hey, we're open to capital infusions. And if you got somebody like a Lulu or a Nike or Amazon, although they have a competing product, that would send the stock ripping higher. But other than that, this was really not good at all.
Coming up, we're all over some after-hours movers, shares of Coinbase and Roblox on the move. We're digging into the numbers next. Plus, speaking of earnings, Disney's on deck, but is there a better bet in this space? Get ready. We are giving the traders a would you rather. That's right, three of them. Don't go anywhere. More Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Earnings alert on Coinbase shares sinking after reporting first quarter revenues that missed analyst estimates. Trading volumes and monthly transacting users, also slipping versus last quarter. Kate Rooney is here with the details. Kate.
Hey, Melissa. Coinbase proving its volatility here from quarter to quarter with a big drop off there in monthly users, trading volume, and revenue as well. The crypto company losing $1.98 on EPS. Net revenue was down 50% from last quarter and about 27% from a year ago. Monthly transacting users were down 19% quarter over quarter. Trading volume was down 43%. That was pretty much in line with a drop in spot volume. I just got off the phone with CFO Alicia Haas. She told me, we've always known that crypto is volatile and we're prepared to navigate through volatility with peaks and troughs. We have a long-term perspective, she says, and a decade now of managing through some of these volatile environments. She did talk about diversifying revenue. 54% of users are now doing something other than just trading, so that really is the bull case for Coinbase. The take rate also went up to 1.3%. That's pretty much the percentage that Coinbase makes on transactions. I asked her about that, and the idea of fee compression, that was Jim Chanos' big reason for shorting the stock. She says, we're not competing on price, we're competing on the experience at this time, and so far not feeling pressured to lower prices. Call kicking off at 5:30 Eastern. Melissa, back to you.
All right, Kate, thank you. Kate Rooney, is this an example of growth at all costs? Guy.
Well, and not to do the dog pile on the rabbit, but I think this is the 10th largest holding in the ARK ETF. The one before it, I believe, is Unity Software, which is down, I think, 38%. And again, it's just, you know, why do I bring it up? Because it's important to bring up. I mean, this stock, Coinbase, was a $365 stock in November. It's down 87% since then. They're not bad companies. I think Rick Heitzman just spoke exactly that. They just never been at the levels they traded at over the fall, and the market is now, for the first time, price discovery. Is this growth at all costs? Clearly, I don't know what, you know, experience of Coinbase is. Clearly, you know, I haven't experienced it, probably for the better.
Yeah, I mean, to say that they're not, I mean, it's fine to say we're not going to compete on price, but ultimately, you're going to compete on price, Tim, and not just experience.
Think about their core verified user base of 98 million that came in ahead of expectations, but how obliterated a lot of these folks have been also. You can't tell me that there's going to be a quick growth turnaround. Even if you see a dramatic turnaround, I think there's been a lot of capital that's been obliterated. We've all heard the numbers on, where the average dollar allocated towards crypto is, and it's down about 40%. And it's, you know, people that jumped in at the top, sounds a little bit like ARK. The most notable thing I see from from the headlines after the earnings announcement is that the company filed a mixed shelf securities registration. So they are at least trying to be opportunistic and get the ability to be coming back to market. And again, when you file a shelf, you don't necessarily have to run. But this is the story. This is the story we're going to continue to talk about. Companies that are losing money cannot sustain the profile that they have. We just had that conversation with Rick. That's very important here. And again, having to go to capital markets when capital markets are very different is what I'm seeing in the after hours here.
Yeah, let's get to another one here. Also feeling the pain after hours. Roblox also out with earnings after the bell. The stock is sliding after reporting a bigger than expected loss per share and a revenue miss. Our Steve Kovac joins us with the very latest. Steve.
Hey there, Belle. Yeah, Roblox blaming lower engagement from players for those misses. Company reporting a loss per share of 27 cents versus 21 cent loss expected and revenue $631 million versus $645 million expected. But it's those user stats that have been demolishing shares all year. Roblox reporting for last quarter 54.1 million users versus 55 million expected. Now that's up 28%, but far slower growth than the 79% growth we saw a year ago. Chief Business Officer Craig Donato telling me the company was able to hang on to all those players it gained during the pandemic, but those players are spending less time on the platform, and that translates to less money for the company. Donato saying, quote, "To us, you know, COVID was obviously an unfortunate circumstance, but pushed a ton of people onto Roblox. And the question is, are we retaining those users? And we're not only retaining them, we're growing them." Now we're expecting to hear more from the company tomorrow morning on their earnings call. But for now, that's what we know, Mel.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Steve Kovac. And do not miss an exclusive interview with the CEO of Roblox on Mad Money. That's tomorrow. He'll be digging into the company's quarter. Let's trade this one right now, though. You know, pandemic darling, when there was nothing to do, people spent lots of time in the old metaverse playing games and such, Dan. But now there's plenty of things to do. So they're still playing, but they're just not playing as much. That's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the metrics that they pointed to, I think, are pretty good news, though. I mean, the stock is not down on a miss as much as you might expect. And one of the things that we've been talking about is the need to raise capital. We know from 20 years ago, you know, some of those companies were able to survive because the capital they did raise in good times. These guys have $3 billion of cash on their balance sheet, I think net about $1.5 billion. So on an enterprise value, this thing is actually looking pretty reasonable, less than about 5x sales here. We know a lot of these stocks were trading 20 times sales at their heights just last year or so. So, you know, we spent a lot of time, and this is one that I've been trying to constructive about over the last 6 to 9 months since we heard about the Meta move, right? When we were talking about Facebook's pivot and what are some ways to play metaverses, because there's not going to be one metaverse. This is one of them. So I think this is a fairly reasonably priced asset right here. And maybe some of the news is about as bad as it gets in the near term, especially after the decline of stocks had.
Does this tell you, Karen, anything about, I was going to say Facebook, Meta's move into the Meta? Or is that just so far off that it doesn't matter what goes on right now because we have no idea what Facebook's going to come out with?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, when you look at Facebook right now, trading at, I don't know, 12, 13 times earnings maybe, I think of that as zero in there for Meta. The Trade Desk thing was actually more concerning to me. Can I just add one thing, though? I think Coinbase is actually sort of getting interesting.
Really?
I mean,
why?
It's a land grab. It's a land grab. And if one believes that, you know, cryptocurrencies will exist, then they're in an interesting spot. They're getting close now to probably, I don't know, $12 billion of market cap to capture all of those users. I don't know. This would be a 3-day rule one for sure. But I don't know. I think there might be something here.
All right. Karen's watching Coin. We are just getting started here on Fast Money. Here's what's coming up next.
Disney on deck. The House of Mouse is gearing up for earnings. But is there a better play in the space? We're dishing out a would you rather. Plus, biotech bang. The group's surging in today's session. But is there more room to run? The traders are breaking it down next. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
Well, Welcome back to Fast Money. It's been a rough year for media and entertainment stocks. Disney, Netflix, Paramount, and Comcast have all fallen 30 to 60 plus percent over the last year, and forward PEs of between 11 to 22 times earnings. So at Disney on Deck to report tomorrow, and all these names just down in the dumps, has there ever been a better time to play? Would you rather, which means I'd like you guys to choose one of those four options. Guy Adami, can you follow these? Can you understand what we're getting at? What we want you to do? Would you rather?
No, you know, it's unfair to start with me because you know I get confused very easily. The other guys and gals can cheat off my answer. But I'll play your reindeer game there, sister, if you want. In this would you rather, I will take Disney. You know, basically at this price, 108-ish, I actually think you're probably getting Disney Plus for free, which is probably the right multiple, given it's a bit of a loss leader. But at 18 times next year's numbers, when was the last time you saw Disney at this multiple? Hasn't been for a long time. This sort of 105 levels where it traded at sideways from 2015 to 19. I would rather Disney here. I don't think they have to do much to get this stock back higher.
Karen, what would you say?
On the would I rather, I would rather, and I'm talking my book here, Paramount. So, you know, when we look at clearly streaming is the issue here, and Paramount, if you look at the valuation, it actually trades at 10 times earnings, which is cheaper than Netflix. It's still growing, which, you know, it's very much up in the air whether Netflix is still growing. That would probably be my next rather, but Paramount, to me, I think, though, one other thing, though, the idea of it being a takeover target is probably not on the table right now. However, though, they are growing the streaming business, and the valuation to me, which I always come back to, that's compelling. So Paramount.
By the way, this is the first time in Fast Money history that we are playing Would You Rather. And we do have an animation for it, which is very special, Tim, to mark this special occasion. But what would your choice be off that board?
Well, I'm going to, because I think this is a new game, I'm not going to play by my own rules, but I almost feel like you're asking me for two picks. But I'll go with Guy's Disney, but let me talk about Comcast then. See what I did there? Because I'm not going to die on the Netflix hill, even though I am long that stock. At Comcast, it's really simple. Broadband is growing. This is a cash flow machine. This is a company trading at 7x EBITDA. This is a company that will generate probably $15 billion in free cash flow in 2022. So when I think about, yes, there's an intense competitive landscape, but when I think about the market we're in and companies that should be rewarded, and a company that I think is you know, able to also slug it out in the competitive forces if they need to, it's Comcast. It's a multiple I like. I would rather.
Comcast, by the way, is the parent company of CNBC, of course. Yes. Dan Nathan, how about you?
You know what? I'll follow Tim up that hill on Netflix here. And I'm not exactly dying on it yet, but I'm really intrigued. And I know listening to Karen after their results a couple weeks ago and that move lower here. And I know she had a quick in and out. But, you know, this is one I'll bet you she comes back to for valuation purposes, because this stock has never been this cheap. And I actually think the things that investors who had been in the name and wrote it down from $700 just 6 or 7 months ago down to, at the time, it was like $300 or something like that, they're really disappointed. They think they mis-executed here. And that would have been really over the last year and a half. I see the opportunity now, though, with the advertising business to really change this company going forward for the next phase of this streaming war here. So to me, I think it looks really interesting. And betting against Reed Hastings is probably, as Guy would say, not a great investment strategy over the last 25 years.
Yeah. All right, let's stick with Disney here. The option traders believe the Magic Kingdom is primed for a comeback. So let's get straight to Mike Coe with the action. Mike.
Earnings coming up, unsurprisingly. We've got above average options volume. It traded about 1.4 times its average daily options volume today. Calls outpacing puts. Right now, the options market is implying a move of more than 9% by the end of the week after they report. The trade that caught my eye was the September 115 calls. Those were trading for about $7.70 a contract, and ultimately over 3,700 of them changed hands today. Buyers of those calls are obviously betting that Disney can finish above that 115 strike price by the $7.70 that they paid. And we have seen a little bit more of this type of activity. Hard-beaten stocks are seeing people buying longer-dated calls, hoping on a rebound.
All right. Thanks for that, Mike. For more options action, be sure to tune into the full show. That's Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Coming up, big day for biotech, the XBI ETF jumping more than 5%. So is there more room to run for the trade? We'll break down the move next. Plus, we are digging into the commodity complex. Prices soaring this year. So is there any relief in sight? We're plowing in to find some answers. More on that when Fast Money returns.
Get your trades to go with the Fast Money Podcast. Catch us anytime, anywhere. Follow today on your favorite podcasting app. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Time for our move of the day. Check out the XBI biotech ETF jumping more than 5% today. Some big names leading the charge. Guy, Amgen was your final trade yesterday. Here we are, pickup in biotech. What do you make of this?
Like an elephant you are in terms of that memory, Melissa Lee. Yes, it was. I thought it was good price action on a lousy tape. You look at the XBI, that 65 level that we recently bottomed out at, that was the same level we bounced from in December of 2018. I, too, am a bit of an elephant. So I think you can trade this. I think biotech's been unjustly beat up, and I think it's at levels now that make sense. So if you want to play with the ETF, the XBI makes sense. I think Amgen, in terms of valuation, is still too cheap.
Yeah. Tim, would you get into biotech?
I'll tell you, if you look at, and I'll go with the IBB, and if you look at those top six or seven names outside of Moderna, you have some great balance sheets in there. The question really has been, where's the next growth coming from for some of these companies? Gilead, certainly, although they're moving to oncology, I think continues to play out. So I think Moderna is a stock that is range bound and, in fact, has dragged down the IBB dramatically. But again, a high multiple stock that I think is a heavy weight is something you have to watch.
Yeah, IBB is market cap weighted. XBI has sort of more of the smaller players. Karen, in this environment, XBI might not be where you want to be versus the IBB, although both are trading terribly.
Yeah, they really are trading terribly. I wonder, IBB, I think, was partially up today on that the acquisition Bellhaven did. Huge premium. But I think sometimes you see an acquisition happened, and then you see a little bit more activity. Sort of, it's, you know, somebody rings the bell on other CEOs. All right, now it's time to act. So I'm surprised we haven't seen more activity given the balance sheets of the big players. That's where I would be, is the IBB.
All right, coming up, Musk sounding off on Donald Trump's Twitter ban, what he said he would have done differently, and the timeline he laid out for the deal to get done. We've got the details ahead, plus keeping up with the crops. Ag prices soaring this year, so we are breaking down what it means for the consumer. More on that next. Do not go anywhere. Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out the incredible price spikes in some major ag commodities this year. Wheat, corn, cotton, soybeans all surging and potentially making matters worse. Only 22% of U.S. expected corn crop has been planted. That's less than half the normal amount. It is the slowest to a crop season since 2011. So why are we so behind? Let's ask Kirk Hinz, Chief Operating Officer of BAMWX, a weather technology company. Kirk, great to have you with us.
Yes, thank you guys so much.
Why are things so bad?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're essentially in what we're calling a La Nina right now. And that just essentially means a very active northerly jet stream that's pushing in a lot of moisture to areas like North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, the northern part of the United States. And it's just frequent areas of low pressure. A lot of rainfall is essentially what has happened since February 1st. Most of those areas, top five wettest of all time since February 1st. So consistent rain and just not the ability to get into the fields for sure.
I take it that other parts of the world are not equipped to make up for any deficits here in the United States in terms of planting?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So La Nina definitely means dry for a lot of other areas too. Alternatively, central Brazil, very dry right now. We have Ukraine, very dry right now. A lot of areas also impacted throughout the world when we're talking about La Nina. So I would say definitely looking at a global scale, things could be better for sure.
So, you know, I know that you're a weather technology company, but how should we think about it in terms of the impact on price?
Yeah, great question. So essentially, the longer it takes for farmers to get out into the field, especially in a lot of these major crop areas, that means it's going to take longer for, you know, the crop to grow, essentially, and it's more susceptible. La Nina also can mean in the July and August drought. And it could also mean very warm conditions. So we may start off kind of very wet here, but in the long run, that could actually be detrimental as we turn hotter and drier. So it's just everything is delayed, and it's a trickle-down effect for the rest of the season.
How supply constrained do you think we'll be for various crops? I mean, which crops will we see the biggest price spikes simply because yield won't be there?
Yeah, I think corn and soybeans for sure, and then I would be looking at wheat. I wouldn't sleep on the cotton market either. It's been exceptionally warm and dry across areas of Oklahoma into Texas here. To be honest, I would focus on corn and soybeans for sure, but don't sleep on the wheat and cotton markets as well. I would say most grain.
You're a consumer too, Kirk. So when you see this and you see your forecast, what are you thinking in terms of what you're going to see in the grocery store?
Yeah, absolutely. Prices are going to increase, unfortunately, especially with this being a global moisture issue. I can't imagine that prices are going to decrease because of this issue. So it is a problem, and it does matter.
All right, Kirk, great to get your take. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Kirk Hinz. And then there's a fertilizer problem, Tim. There's lack of fertilizer. Fertilizer is very expensive, so farmers are not using as much, which means that yields will be even more challenged, aside from weather issues.
Yeah, and don't sleep on the cotton market. So, I mean, I think you've got a case here where, as I always say, the best thing for higher prices and commodities is a supply response. What Kurt is pointing out is structurally it's going to be impossible. And weather conditions are a factor on top of the rest of the perfect storm that was global supply disruption and constraints and whatnot. I do think if you look at your basket of fertilizer companies, and that would probably be Mosaic, IPI, and CF Industries, when you're looking at their realized net prices per ton, they're up somewhere in the neighborhood of 80% over a year. And it's a case where the profitability for these companies is very cyclical. But in the short run, especially if you look at the space, Mosaic's down probably 25 to 30% off its recent highs. They just announced on Monday. I think they gave you a pretty decent guide. You had about five or six upgrades coming on the market. So I think after a massive run along with the underlying commodities, I think some of these names are interesting again.
A ceasefire in the war between Russia and Ukraine and whatever the Fed does will not solve any of these problems that are facing the farmers around the world, Karen. So how do you think about, the stresses the consumer will feel? Because it sounds like the price increases will last well into next year, if not beyond.
Yeah, that is a problem. We're in sort of a vicious cycle. I mean, to Tim's point, even though, these things are cyclical, but they're not necessarily one season cyclical. They could be cyclical for a couple of years. This obviously just adds to the inflation problem that the Fed has. And I think we're going to see it through to beef prices. And, if corn and those things are expensive, then beef prices get expensive as well. This is bad for restaurants, bad for the consumer.
Guy, what's your trade out of this?
There are two. Kroger's wins to this. You saw Kroger's make an all-time high a couple months ago. It's sold off since, but KR's won. And I'll tell you, Deere and Company, the old John Deere, J.P. Morgan upgraded the stock to neutral from underweight in the middle of March, $440 price target. I'm willing to bet before earnings on May 20th, they upgraded again to buy from neutral. I think this stock is cheap on valuation. I know the argument is a lot of pull forward. I don't buy it yet. I think Deere goes higher.
Coming up, some headlines out of Elon Musk's Twitter deal, his take on former President Donald Trump's ban, and a timeline on when that deal could close. We have the details when Fast Money returns. Welcome back. Here's a sneak peek at the Cramer Cam. Jim is talking with the CEO of Upstart. Catch the full exclusive interview at the top of the hour on Mad Money. That's must watch. Don't forget, you can have Cramer delivered right to your inbox at the CNBC Investing Club. Sign up now at cnbc.com/join the club or by using the QR code on your screen. All right, meantime, more headlines out of Elon Musk's Twitter deal. Speaking at a Financial Times conference, Musk saying he would reverse the Twitter ban on former President Donald Trump and that it was not correct to ban him in the first place. Musk also saying that best case scenario, a deal for the social stock could be done in 2 to 3 months. Stock doesn't really agree with Elon Musk, Karen.
No, it doesn't. I mean, as far as risk arb spreads go, this is really, really wide, which I always find interesting considering he is the richest man in the world. But basically, Twitter right now is just a Tesla play. If Tesla really falls out of bed, then this spread will get wider. he theoretically could close it in that amount, short amount of time if he doesn't get a CFIUS review or something like that. And I just saw, crossing the tape, Apollo looking to buy or looking to lead a $1 billion round of financing. So it should be doable. It really trades like he's kind of a joker. But I think the deal will go through, but I'm not long it as an arb because you don't know the downside. It's not just a broken deal back to where it was. Does he then get out of his stock? That would be really bad.
It's interesting that Elon Musk is going out there, Dan, with all these things that he would do if he were CEO, as if the deal is going to close, including reversing that ban on Donald Trump, which he says Jack Dorsey does, in fact, agree with him on.
Yeah, I mean, Jack seemed obviously very conflicted about all of this. They waited until people died in a violent insurrection in our Capitol and, you know, to ban him. And he had broken their terms of service for trust and safety on numerous occasions over the prior 5 years. So obviously, Jack didn't want to do it. I just don't get the whole, you know, free speech sort of thing. I mean, when you think about it, this is a platform that's not even allowed in China. We know that's an authoritarian regime that Musk has actually cozied up to very, very closely as it relates to his interests with Tesla, the factories there. It's a huge market for them. So he seems a bit conflicted to me. And as far as his timetable about getting the deal closed, I think one of the things that we could all agree on about Elon Musk, he's not pretty good, or he's not that good with timetables as it relates to. So the longer this thing goes and the more risk to Tesla's stock to the downside, to Karen's point, you know, this thing is not likely to happen. 5420 is not going to make it, people. I don't know why anybody would agree that he should pay 7x sales for this company when some of its much better comps, like a Snap or something, is trading below that. The longer that 5420 bid sits out there and the lower a comp like Snap goes, I think the more interesting a bearish trade looks, long Snap, short Twitter. We know what the upside risk is, but we also know that the likelihood of this thing being ratcheted down is probably going to happen and come into a theory.
Well, you know, we've got like no more daylight left in the show, but I have to push back a little bit, Dan, in that, you know, is that fair to say he's cozying up to China for Tesla? And that's, you know, sort of contradictory. We've got a lot of U.S. companies that are, you know, big presences in China that are
Apple
depending on China
it.
For the next leg of growth. And they say that they believe in free speech and human rights and all these different things.
But he's going out of his way to buy this asset, Mel, because he's using the case of free speech. And when he first came out, he said he doesn't really care about the economics of it. So he's a free speech warrior. You know, I mean, listen, I just think there's a lot of conflicts there.
All right. This is a debate for another show, clearly. Up next, we got your final trades. Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out some of these after-hours movers. They are big moves in some cases. EA is up by 2.6%. Wind Resorts is flat. And Unity Software, that is the big one. It is down by 26.5%. Reminder that Cramer is going to be speaking with the CEO of Unity tonight on Mad Money, so you will not want to miss that one. Time for the final trade here. Let's go around the horn. Tim Seymour.
Back to my would you rather, Comcast, cable financials are strong, the business services are growing, it's 10 times free cash flow. Interesting.
Karen Feinerman.
Yeah, I'm looking for places to hide in this market. CVS is one of them, retail, pharmacy benefits, and healthcare. So 11 times earnings, 2.25 dividend value.
Dan Nathan.
Mel, you seem mad.
But I'm not.
Roblox here. Roblox looks kind of interesting. It fell off a cliff into this print, and I don't think the quarter of the guys was that bad. So, or at least the quarter. We don't know the guidance yet, so maybe you see a bounce.
I'm never mad. Kind of. Guy.
I'm mad because the Rangers didn't show up last night, Mel. As
know.
You know, we talked about it earlier, but I know it's crazy. AMAT into earnings late next week. That 34% sell-off is enough.
All right. Thanks for watching Fast. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.